Funding for Think comes from SMU Graduate Liberal Studies programs.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Have you ever thought that if you could just find the time, you could write an amazing story? My guest today doesn't believe everyone has a novel in them. He believes we have many. Whether or not those novels have any commercial or literary value is another matter entirely, but for many of us would-be Hemingways and Brontes, that might just be beside the point. Chris Beatty founded National Novel Writing Month in November of 1999, originally to challenge himself and his friends to stop talking and start writing their big ideas. He's cranked out multiple novels since then and shares some of what he has learned about the joys of just getting it done in his book, No Plot, No Problem, a low-stress, high-velocity guide to writing a novel in 30 days. He's just published an expanded and updated version of it that's out now in paperback. Chris Beatty, welcome to Think.
It's so great to be on the show.
We will talk about how to write a novel in a month in a moment, but first of all, talk about why we should do it.
Well, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head when you talked about not all of us having a novel, but I think all of us have a bunch of novels in us. And I think that just as adults, we still have this same need to kind of play and explore, to sort of make and build things that we had as kids. I mean, that was really what sustained us when we were younger. And I feel like as adults, we get so busy doing so many things, taking care of family, taking care of work, basically doing things to help other people's lives that we forget to kind of nurture that creative spark that we all have. And I think National Novel Writing Month or taking time for music or art, it gives that sense of kind of magic and fun and brings it back into our lives.
You've tapped into something here because it occurred to me that we would never tell somebody who likes to just play the guitar or play tennis or likes to paint occasionally that they should never bother with that unless they're good enough to make a living at it. Why do we have this elite status in our heads attached to novelists in particular?
It's so true. I mean, I have been, I was just traveling and I flew home and told somebody, you know, we started talking about what we do. And I mentioned that I love to write novels. And they, you know, it immediately was this question of, oh, are you going to, you know, be the next Harry Potter? Is that the idea? And you know, like you said, we wouldn't say that if we had a friend who went jogging saying, oh, are you going to get a Nike sponsorship or
right.
something? And I do think that there's this strange all or nothing pressure when it comes to books that, you know, people, and maybe it's just this a passionate group of readers. People do want to read more great novels. But I think, unfortunately, for those of us who try to write novels, we tend to bring that same pressure to our first drafts, which makes the whole experience so anxiety provoking and nerve wracking. And I think the whole point of a first draft really is to embrace this kind of warts and all sense of fun. And it's hard to get there when you are thinking, should I be the next Harry Potter? Is this, you know, is this a Pulitzer Prize winning manuscript?
Yeah, I hadn't done them in years, but the book made me think about how in high school I liked those little timed writing exercises at the beginning of class where the teacher would put like, you know, a baseball glove and an eyedropper on her desk and say, okay, write about this for 10 minutes. And it was fun and liberating because nobody had any expectations at all for whatever you would produce.
Exactly. And that's, I think, one of the number one rules if anybody out there is considering taking part in National Novel Writing Month next month and bashing out a 50,000-word novel, I would say rule number one is lower your expectations, which kind of seems like it might be kind of sad. But in fact, I think that that is how you get into that sort of liberated feeling of, I can do this. I'm going to start writing. I'm going to keep writing, you know, and it sheds that little creature called an inner editor or inner critic that I think we all drag along with us on any of our creative endeavors, whose job is really just to be there to tell us how bad we are at whatever that thing is. And I think that when you give yourself this sort of limited time frame, I think creativity really loves constraints. I think it thrives in those moments when you are just looking at a baseball glove and you have 10 minutes to write something. And National Novel Writing Month in some ways is really just a 30-day version of that same challenge where you sort of lower your expectations and really just revel in productivity.
How did the first one come about and how were you able to rope however many friends in to do this with you?
Well, so the first one started in 1999, and I was 26 years old, and I think I was just kind of at that point in my life when I'd been out of college for 5 years, and I just wasn't feeling like life was quite happening in the way that I had dreamed it would. And I think I was just hungry for some big challenge. I loved books. I am an only child, and I grew up really with books as my siblings. So I think for me, the idea of writing a book had always been very appealing, but was never anything I dreamed I could do. And I knew I wouldn't be able to do it alone. So I just sent out this email saying, hey, what if we did this crazy thing of trying to pack a 50,000-word novel into a month? And I am blessed with a group of friends who cheerfully say yes to very bad ideas. And so there were 21 of us that first year doing it. None of us really knew what we were doing. But I think we had that sense that this was going to be an adventure and that we were in it together. And that, in some ways, was this one of the many accidental discoveries that National Novel Writing helped me see was, you know, that writing is an ideal social activity in the same way that I think we end up we make time to exercise if we have a buddy that's going to be running with us or meeting us at the gym or something in a way that we never would on our own. It's just really nice to have a group of people that, even though you're not collaborating on a story, you are getting together in the same space, you know, putting in headphones, loading up on coffee and muffins or whatever, and going to town. And I think just seeing that, being able to look up and see other people in the room with you pursuing the same thing, really helps give you a sense of commitment and accountability that isn't there normally.
So in theory, that sounds great to me, but I wonder about, you know, the book clubs that I have been in have turned into, you know, conversations about everything but the book itself. And I wonder if you all had to fight against your urge to talk about work and about your girlfriend and about everything else besides sitting down and actually quietly writing.
Yes. I mean, that is the ultimate battle of writing anything, I fear, is just that constant sense either that you're going to, it would be so much more interesting to be talking to somebody or opening an internet browser. And, you know, I think for us, we discovered this very nice rhythm, which was we would all bring our laptops to these coffee shops. And this is 1999, so these laptops are like the size of small washing machines. These are very large laptops.
You wheel them in on a crate.
Exactly, yeah. And so we would write for 20 minutes, and then we would talk and complain and commiserate for 20 minutes. So we do this 40-minute on, 20-minute off schedule, and just keep rolling. And it's amazing how much you can get done. Even if you just do that twice or three times, you write a lot of words in that amount of time. And you do give yourself that kind of nice time to chat and plea for help and ask your friends to put you out of your misery. All of that stuff can happen in that 20 minutes.
Your description of what it's like over the course of the month is interesting. Like, in the beginning, you're just, you know, en fuego. You're on fire. You're typing up a storm. And then week two, things start to look very bleak. And then it picks up after that. It almost sounds like a crash diet of some sort.
Right. Well, and I also wonder, when I talked about running, I was just making things up because I hate to exercise and never run. But I feel like there must be comparisons here with marathon running. You know, mm-hmm. That sense when you sort of start out, you're feeling great, you're fully carbo-loaded, or again, whatever athletes actually do. And I think that this process is the same one that people who give themselves a year or a decade to write a first draft of a novel go through. That same sense of, oh, this isn't so bad. This is kind of coming together. And then followed by just these complete stomach churning, you know, this disheartening sense that this will never work out. You have no business being here. You know, novels should be written by professional novelists. This was not a good idea. And I think if you keep going, you always end up kind of finding your way back to a good place again. And there really is, though, these sort of emotional ups and downs that can be very pronounced. Week two also is particularly difficult because there's something when you tell your friends that you're going to be writing a novel in a month, people get excited, you know, much more excited than they would in the way that if you said, I'm going to plan on, you know, writing a novel over 3 years, you know,
right.
People really can get behind the month-long novel. And, you know, people will even, you know, agree to make you food and give you wrist massages and deliver you treats, all this thing. But I think around week two, just as the going gets tough in your book and you're needing to make these difficult plot decisions, your whole cheering section has gotten bored with the whole thing and have moved on to whatever, the new season of Game of Thrones or something, and have kind of left you there. And that's where it's so nice to have this enormous community. So this year, there will likely be about 500,000 novelists taking part in National Novel Writing Month all over the world. We have a whole bunch of people doing it in Dallas, in the Dallas area. And there are those same coffee shop gatherings that are taking place. So when you start to lose momentum around week two, there is, whether you have friends doing this with you or not, there is a community that you can kind of go in and tap into their energy when your energy starts to flag.
I was really surprised, not really surprised, but it was interesting to read that, for example, the novel The Night Circus by Aaron Morgenstern started as a 30-day novel for National Novel Writing Month.
It did. And over the years, we've had a growing number of really big bestsellers. So Sarah Gruen's Water for Elephants, which was also made into a big Hollywood movie, also started as a National Novel Writing Month manuscript. And it's been interesting over the years. You know, it really did start with this just kind of group of over-caffeinated yahoos who were, you know, just just kind of doing this for fun. But we've really, it's been wonderful as the community has grown. We've become a regular kind of routine part of life for professional writers as well, because the people that are under book contract need that 50,000 word kick in the pants more than anybody else, because if they don't turn in a novel, they have to give back that advance. So they're really motivated. And it's really made this nice thing where I think now we've probably had about 10 New York Times bestsellers that started in the program. We've had hundreds of traditionally published novels. And of course, tens of thousands of people have self-published their NaNoWriMo novels. But I think the environment is really this sort of friendly, social, very encouraging one where the people who have done this a lot and do this for a living can get that sense, that kind of contact high of being around the people that are doing it for the first time and falling in love with these characters and discovering the joys of writing. And those people who are doing it for the first time can also get advice from these veterans, these experts that really know the ins and outs of the craft of storytelling.
Can you describe for us, Chris, what it feels like the first time you finish a novel?
Oh,
I mean, writing
amazing.
A novel, I should say.
Yeah. So the first draft, you basically week one, it starts out wonderful. You wonder why you haven't been doing this your whole life. You should be writing novels every month. This is great. And week two hits, you lose momentum. People get bored with it. You start to be very sad. A lot of tears, kind of you get in that fetal position under your desk for many hours in a row. And then week three is when you kind of start to get this second wind. And these things that you didn't realize you were putting in your book at the outset, you didn't understand why they were there, you just kind of left them in there for word count reasons, suddenly kind of become something that makes sense, that helped tie the story together. And so week four, as you usually, once you cross the 35,000 word line, there's this strange physics where the whole month sort of tilts downhill. You pick up speed, the end is in sight, and it's glorious. I mean, it's really kind of like the training montages in Rocky where, you know, Survivor starts playing Eye of the Tiger, people are showering you with champagne and confetti. It's an exciting, bewildering, beautiful time. And I really, that's one of the things that I tell people that are doing National Novel Writing Month that are sort of wondering, you know, thinking that my book is horrible, this is never going to work out, just to really stick with it, because finishing that month-long novel, getting to the end of that story, just feels like nothing else on earth.
I love this phrase that you use, exuberant imperfection.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, so here is the problem with being an adult tackling something new, is that we are terrified of looking like idiots. You know, and I just feel like as adults, our lives become ever more about doing the things that we're good at, right? At work, we kind of develop this sense of skills. We hone them. At home, maybe as parents, we try to learn from our mistakes and grow and get better. And I just feel like it's scary to go out on a limb and try something new. I mean, I think about this. My wife has been encouraging us to take dancing lessons, dance classes, mm-hmm. which, you know, there are a lot of men out there that will tell you that there are no more terrifying words than your wife bringing home the local schedule for the salsa curriculum, you know, at the local Y. So I think we do just get so afraid of being in over our head and out of our element. And so the idea of exuberant imperfection, I think, helps give novelists this sense that it's okay to make mistakes. In fact, that's the best way to do something, is just to dive in with both feet, to know it's not going to be perfect, but to keep doing it anyway.
We're speaking with Chris Beatty, founder of National Novel Writing Month. His book is called No Plot, No Problem, A Low-Stress, High-Velocity Guide to Writing a Novel in 30 Days. Join us at 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Graduate Liberal Studies programs. Accepting applications for January to design your own Master of Liberal Studies degree at SMU with concentrations in Global Studies, Creative Writing, and Organizational Dynamics. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with Chris Beatty, founder of National Novel Writing Month and author of the newly expanded and updated book, No Plot, No Problem, a low-stress, high-velocity guide to writing a novel in 30 days. November, we should say, is National Novel Writing Month, so you have time to get yourself ready. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. And in fact, Chris, you recommend that we do take a little time before we start preparing for National Novel Writing Month. How should we do that?
Well, it kind of depends, I think, on your general level of how much you love planning in general. So I think that really there's sort of two schools in the preparing for your novel. There are the planners, people who love to make outlines and character sketches and do questionnaires and get in, actually dress up like their characters and interview each other. And then there are people that are called pantsers. And these are the people who love to write by the seat of their pants. They, you know, basically have nothing. They just kind of show up to the blank page on November 1st and start writing. And I think that sort of knowing who you are as a person, do you tend to be more meticulous? Do you like this sort of improv nature of it, really will help you know how much planning you should do. But I do encourage everybody to spend it, you know, at least a couple days thinking about who their character might be, what's going on in that character's life that might be sort of story worthy. I think at every point in our life, we sort of have new experiences that would form the basis of a great novel. And then to kind of think about traditional sort of story things like conflict, like what might be keeping them from doing this thing that they want to do, or what sort of problems might you dump on their lap so that they can spend 30 days wrestling with them.
I love this idea that you make two lists, one of things that you absolutely love to see in the books you like to read, and one that tell you, oh, this is not for me. And then you basically just throw away the list of things that you hate to read about and stick in your writing with the things you like.
Right. And I think that's the best exercise that you can do if you are coming to this as a reader and a first-time novelist, and the question is, what would I ever write about? That tends to be the thing that stops people the most. It's like, I'd love to write a novel, but I just don't know what I have no ideas for a book. And the kind of sneaky activity that I do with people is to make that first list, which is make the list of things you love. And this could be urban settings. It could be the kinds of characters that you like, people who are at turning points in their lives. It could be coming of age stories. And you just kind of make this list of all the things, including the sort of the craft elements you like. So maybe you love cliffhanger chapter endings. Maybe you love snarky dialogue, you know, and by making this list of things that you love to read, those are also the list of things that you will do well as a writer, because those are the things that really your brain just gets. This is what, you know, this stuff just makes sense to you. So I would tell anybody out there to go ahead and make that list. The second list, I think, is also very important, which is the list of things that kind of make you sad, things that bore you, because when you set out to write your book and you think, okay, this is sort of light on content. I need to really have some emotional heft to this. I need to make this very book-like. And mm-hmm. I think sometimes we end up grabbing from that list, at least I do, of these things that are very weighty, that may not be things we really want to read, but they just sort of feel significant. So, you know, it might be that suddenly your main character has this disease that they're wrestling with. And that's not really what you meant to do, but it's mm-hmm. like, well, but that seems very good to have something like that in there. So I think it's always important to keep in mind that the kind of book that you like to read will be the kind of book that you should write.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phone now to Maggie in Fort Worth. Hi, Maggie.
Hello.
Hi.
This is something I thought about doing for ages. I have friends who've done it. And I have a question. I don't know that it's necessarily a cheat, but one of the types of books that I like to read, if you're familiar with Roald Dahl, is that he would put together collections of short stories that by the time you reached the end of the book, you realized you had read a novel, even though each one was freestanding on its own. And I've contemplated doing something like that. Does this sound like a strategy that would help you advance more easily if you were doing it in smaller segments versus doing one whole big chunk that are chapters instead of segments like that, more episodic.
What do you think, Chris?
That's a great question. And I would say absolutely yes, that I think one of, you know, the idea of taking any big epic undertaking like writing a novel and breaking it down into manageable steps is key to success. And I love Roald Dahl, and I love that sense of interconnected stories or vignettes. I think that's an excellent approach to National Novel Writing Month. And it's one that a lot of people use. So absolutely do it.
Now, your goal or the goal of people who participate in this is 50,000 words at the end of the month. And I guess a book with a beginning, middle and end. You copped the fact that, you know, 50,000 words is pretty light. It's more novella like. But that doesn't mean that you can't go back through later and revise and add things to it.
Exactly. Yeah. 50,000 words is definitely, we never say novella because that just doesn't seem to impress people the way novel does. It is a short novel, Chris, uh-huh. Please. Short novel.
There you go.
Yeah. But it is, I think 50,000 words is it's enough to get that arc of a story in there. And know that probably at the end, if your novel is going to be kind of a traditional novel, it will end up adding anywhere between 25 to 50,000 words in the rewrite. But that really the nice thing about going ahead and getting that whole beginning, middle, and end down on paper is that there's really, sometimes we don't really know what our book is about until we get through to the end of it. We really make so many discoveries about the parts of the book that really resonate with us are sometimes very different than the ones we expected to. And as a result, stories change as you write them. And because our creative hours are so precious, I love this idea of writing this very rough, exuberantly imperfect first draft, and then looking and seeing, okay, what is the heart of this story? And at that point, going in with the revision and adding those scenes that maybe you sort of abbreviated, or maybe you just kind of put notes saying, you know, have battle with father-in-law here. And then go ahead and at the end of the book, you may discover that, yes, that's a key scene. And now you can go ahead and write that with all the insight that you have having written the entire book. Or you may decide that maybe that you don't need to write that scene, which then kind of ended up saving you a bunch of writing hours.
I don't know if we've been entirely clear about this, but you are not suggesting that we reserve all our vacation time to take in November. You expect that people will, you know, still have to go to work and walk the dog and cook dinner and that sort of thing.
It's true. And in fact, I think it's actually better to be busy when you write the first draft of the novel. And I think this gets back to that sense of lowering your expectations, where there's no expectation that you're going to write a great first draft of a novel in 30 days, because nobody can do that. Even the best writers in the world are going to struggle with that thing. So I think that really being busy is good for your writing. And this is something that, you know, people fit in that have a lot of things going on at work. They have big families. It really is manageable for 30 days to sort of prioritize this crazy art project. And then knowing that at the end of that 30 days, you will go back and make amends with your significant other, that you will once again start loading the dishwasher or unloading the dishwasher. And, you know, routine acts of hygiene will resume as well. And I think that there's something nice about that window, because you really can kind of make some trade-offs and find the time to do this for this 1 month.
All right, so let's talk a little bit more about pushing past our inner critic, because I think so many people have started off on this either in their adult lives or when they were adolescents, and then you get to that place where you think your writing is coming along okay, but you think, this idea is so just horrifically dumb that I can't possibly pursue it and hold my head up. What do you do? Because that doesn't go away, right? You just have to just jump over that wall?
I think you just have to know that every book that you loved, that every book that has inspired you to write, started out in that same place and went through that same sort of swamp of uncertainty, that, you know, every writer faces that. And the key is really just to keep going. I'm reading the book Creativity Inc. right now by one of the executives at Pixar. And he says the same thing, where he says every Pixar movie starts out bad. When they see that first reel, it is a disaster. And it's interesting that he's kind of copying to that. And he says there are never any exceptions. It always starts out bad. And the key is to go ahead and get something down and then start working on revising it. And I really, really absolutely believe that. So, you know, I think that one of this mistaken idea we have that sort of the great novels just sort of tumble out like on these sheafs of gold from the author's head. You know, there's a reason they do not publish the first draft of novels with the final draft of novels. They're just really flawed, and there's no way around it. I mean, I think novels, one of the reasons we love them so much is because they're so complicated and so complex and so immersive, and they really get that way through layers of revision and going back and visiting it again. So that first draft, though, you can't move on to any other phases until you get that foundation in place. So it's an absolutely essential part of the process, but I think it's okay for you to kind of embrace the fact that it's going to be a messy foundational part of the process.
This is sort of a different thing, but it occurred to me that even some TV pilots of shows that went on to become like really beloved and award-winning were awful in the pilot, and it's hard to believe they got picked up. Have you ever seen the pilot of Seinfeld?
Yes, you're so right. Yeah.
It's kind of inchoate, and the characters are different than they turn out, and it was like that was a necessary step to get to where the show ultimately went.
Exactly. And I think if we waited until we were able to sort of have this perfect, fully fleshed out creative work of art, we just would never create anything, right? There would be no television. There would be no movies. There'd be no music. You know, all of these things that are such a huge, inspiring part of our lives wouldn't exist because the creators would be paralyzed by the sense that it wasn't living up to their expectations. And you're so right about television shows. And I think that that's true. You know, also, I would say about writing, you know, as we write more books, the only way to get better is really to go ahead and write these books. And so, you may find that your first book is ultimately the work of genius that launches your career. You may find that your first book is something that you really enjoy writing, that you learn a lot from, but it may not be something that you decide you want to pursue a path towards publication. And I think a lot of our participants really are doing this for themselves, which is interesting, you know, that I would say probably a quarter of our participants take part in National Novel Writing Month every year. They write 50,000 words or more. They win the contest. They get the hallowed PDF of the winner's certificate. And that's what they wanted. They don't share their novel with anybody. They don't publish the novel. They don't send it to an agent. It really is just kind of this sort of private, personal, creative exercise in a way to sort of reconnect with that sense of wonder that I think is inside all of us.
So how do you decide at the end of that 30 days if this is something worth the much greater investment of time to edit, to polish, to rewrite, or whether it's something that you can, with a sense of satisfaction, put away in the bottom drawer and not look at for another decade?
That's such a great question. So in my experience, I feel like I've probably, of this 15 first drafts that I've written over the years for National Novel Writing Month, I'd say maybe 4 or 5 of those have been what I felt I've really truly loved. I've learned something from all of them. I wouldn't trade any of them for the world, but I would say 4 or 5 of them I think really have potential to be revision. And you know, I think when you have finished it, if that feels like there is a real sense of promise or potential. And then from there, I think the next really important step is finding a couple people whose opinion you really trust. And these ultimately should be people that read the same kind of books that you read and love the same, have the same kind of appreciation of aesthetic or tone. It shouldn't just be whoever has time to do this. I know that, you know, sometimes we have very eager readers that really have a different take on the world than we do. And that is usually less helpful to get that feedback, although it's always appreciated. So I'd say find your beta readers, you know, find the people that are going to read it and give you a kind of, first off, a lot of compliments. That's mandatory, is that any feedback session begins with at least 7 hours of compliments about what's great about it. And then an honest, candid assessment of kind of what it would take to make it great. And that, I think, can be very helpful, because when you're writing, you're surrounded by all these details. It's very easy to kind of lose the forest for the trees. And I think that group of readers will help you see the forest more clearly.
All right. I want to talk about sharing along the way, Chris, or not sharing along the way. Somebody very close to me wrote a novel a few years ago, just as a sort of exercise, and along the way said, "Will you please read this?" And frankly, I don't know anything about editing, and I think the novel got finished and it's cool, but I think I was not helpful in offering my constructive criticism while this thing was going on.
Yeah. Well, I think at that point, he just traded his inner editor for you as the editor.
How did you say? You knew it was my husband, right? Yeah, but so, he would have been better off if I just stayed away.
Well, I mean, so it's always tricky. I think the spouse slash significant other as beta reader is a very delicate balance.
Right.
But I would also say, you know, first drafts, I would really recommend that you do share a little bit of your work in progress. I love putting a couple sentences up on Facebook that, of course, I spend an hour polishing and making sure that those are perfect. And then I lie and say, oh, I just ripped this right out of the raw text from today. And then people like it and they say nice things. I think asking for feedback. You know, you can also do a brainstorming session where you give, you know, people that you know and trust just maybe a situation that you're struggling with. But turning over an actual kind of chunk of the manuscript, I just think the goal really is to focus on building without tearing down, right? That's the nature of a first draft. And I think having somebody read it is almost kind of encouraging that bringing that sort of sense of self-doubt and is this the right path back into your process. And that can be tough. And it's not fun. You know, also, I would say it's so important to respect your reader's time, and you know that you're going to ask them in the future to read it. So I tend to hold off until maybe the entire first or second draft is done and then drag these poor people into my fictional world and make them read it.
We have an email from Rocky who wants to know, how does one get involved in National Novel Writing Month? Is there an application process or does one just get after the writing?
That's a great question. So you head to National Novel Writing Month's website, which is NaNoWriMo.org. You can just Google National Novel Writing Month. And then you just sign up. You create an account. It's all free. We're a nonprofit. And you can fill out your author profile. And then once the month begins, you just write offline on your own computer and you update your word count on our site as it goes. And you get this very satisfying stats graph where you can see how close you are to being on par. You can see if you have any writing buddies, how they're doing. You get these great pep talks. So we have really wonderful authors from, you know, Nick Hornby to Neil Gaiman to Sue Grafton to Amy Bender. This year, the author of Divergent is writing pep talks. And these are kind of just can-do missives that we send out to people's inboxes to just help give them some kind of mental reinforcements and help them kind of recommit to this sometimes difficult process. So at the end of the month, then you upload a version of your manuscript to put it in your browser window. It gets counted by our word counting robots and nobody actually reads it. We don't save it. We don't keep it. It's all really basically on the honor system. But if you did write 50,000 words or more, then you get the winner's page. And that's a very beautiful, exciting page where you get to download the certificate that shows you won. You get some winner's badges, things like that. And you get the experience of having written this novel in a month.
Chris Beatty is my guest. He is founder of National Novel Writing Month and author of the book No Plot, No Problem, a low-stress, high-velocity guide to writing a novel in 30 days. Join the conversation by emailing think@kera.org. You can also call 1-800-933-5372 or send me a tweet at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Graduate Liberal Studies programs. Accepting applications for January to design your own Master of Liberal Studies degree at SMU with concentrations in Global Studies, Creative Writing, and Organizational Dynamics. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with Chris Beatty, founder of National Novel Writing Month and author of a book called No Plot, No Problem, a low-stress, high-velocity guide to writing a novel in 30 days. Join the conversation at 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. So, Chris, what happens if things aren't going well and we're, you know, 8 days into this thing and then we think, you know what, I'm just going to scratch it out, you know, ball it up and start over? Bad idea?
That is really a very common occurrence, is this the sudden appearance of the shiny other novel idea that is going to solve all of our problems, that is much better than the one we're working on. In general, I tell people to stay the course, that sense of this is unfixable, this is a mess, I think happens to everybody. That said, I think sometimes you do discover that this story just got off way off on the wrong foot. At that point, what I would tell people is to just leave the parts that they have written. All of that can possibly be used later, maybe just as a long dream sequence that makes that makes no sense whatsoever. But do not delete anything in National Novel Writing Month. All words count. So I would encourage people to maybe put it in italics or change the font to white. And then if they absolutely have to and they have a better idea that they want to pursue, they can do it. But, you know, I would say 80% of the time, the answer is just to see it through, to keep going.
How much time do you spend when you're doing these exercises worried about the sort of beauty of the language?
I really see National Novel Writing Month, this first draft, I do not think about sentences. I do not think about the snappiness of dialogue. I really just think of it as getting the kind of the gist of the story down. And I'm such an obsessive perfectionist when it comes to writing. And so for me, the treat that I will give myself is knowing that in December I get to go back and clean up this stuff and make these descriptions a little bit more evocative and have the dialogue be a little funnier and punch it up. But that's really the reward that I give myself for focusing on the big task at hand, which is just kind of blocking out this entire story. I mean, I think in a lot of ways it's sort of like home building, where you have this real, there's part of you that wants to sort of start hanging wallpaper as soon as the walls are framed, you know, wants to run in there and put in nice carpets down. And that's the part of us that's how we learned how to write, really, is to kind of make things eloquent and kind of reps, have a very beautiful flowing style. But that I think is, you're wasting your time if you're doing that on the first draft, that there are so many things that are going to end up changing. And so really I would say focus on just pouring that concrete, getting those beams up and getting a roof on that thing.
So I would imagine that there are at least two different kinds of participants at National Novel Writing Month. The people who for years have been thinking, gosh, I have this great idea. I just need to, you know, force myself to sit down and do it. And the people who say, I'd love to do this, but I don't have any ideas. What do you say to the second group?
Well, I totally understand it. And it's something that when I sat down to write my first novel, I really thought I had no ideas. And I was right. I had no ideas. I just kind of started writing without a plot or a character. I just started with a voice. And it really turned into this surprisingly unhorrible story. So I would tell people to know that whether you believe it or not, that you do have a novel in you. I think you have many novels in you. And that the process of writing them is so enjoyable. And not just for writers. I think it's really wonderful for readers. I would say if you love books, writing one of your own will help you appreciate the books that you read on a much deeper level. Mm. You'll be able to really celebrate the kind of really difficult things that are happening on a much you'll have firsthand experience of that. But you also see the seams. I mean, you know kind of where this person hit their equivalent of the week two wall, and sort of suddenly we've switched to, now we're in an English countryside when we started in New York, and then we never see New York again. And you know that what happened there. So I think that that's kind of fun, too, is it really gives you an insight into these wonderful books that we read.
And if some threads get dropped along the way in that first draft, it's okay. We can just come back to them in draft three or something.
Or never, exactly. I think that National Novel Writing Month manuscripts, like First Drafts Everywhere, tend to have these very important characters who sort of ride off on some very important mission, never to be heard from again. And I think that's fine.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phone now to Clark in Weatherford. Hi, Clark.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was just going to ask this guy, does he think it's more difficult to write a short story or a novel?
Interesting question.
I actually think short stories are more difficult than novels. I think that the short story, the mechanics of a short story are so tightly wound. And I think with a novel, you really do have the room to sort of explore and find things as you go. I think that there's more room for just having things that are funny that may not be sort of advancing the plot. To me, short stories, which I love to read, just are, they're such beautifully crafted items. And I think novels that don't have that sort of wonderful crafted, that the sort of architecture isn't quite as breathtaking, can still be wonderful. But for short stories, you really do have to be so precise. And for that reason, I would say I think short stories actually are more difficult to write.
Do you read for pleasure during National Novel Writing Month?
I do. And I love kind of finding books. Typically, right before I start, I will read some novel that really ends up being something that I just think, oh, I love this tone. You know, it's and I'll end up kind of using that almost like the same way somebody that's in a choir might have like a sort of a pitch pipe. Just to kind of get this sense of like, oh, I really want to have a similar feel. Some people actually, though, say no reading. They don't want to have that sense that something might influence them or distract them. And so they tend to kind of go on a media fast where they're not really going to movies. They're not watching television. Their novel really becomes their primary source of entertainment.
So you include tips and tricks that you have heard from people who have done this over the years, some of which are just really clever. Like if you're having trouble coming up with, you know, characters, you can imagine an actor and then sort of write as if you're picturing that actor.
Right. I think that's incredibly helpful. You know, you just end up getting sort of shades and dimensions of characters when you cast different actors in those roles that it's hard to come into on your own. There's a National Novel Writing Month participant named Lonnie Diane Rich, and she's published a whole bunch of her NaNoWriMo novels. And she has this great exercise that she leads people through where, you know, you think about, OK, we're going to think about a divorced waitress at a truck stop, and then you cast it in your mind with, you know, Drew Barrymore versus Angelina Jolie versus Helen Mirren, and all of those, I think suddenly you're like, oh, I see very different characters for all of those people. So if you're somebody that has trouble visualizing characters, which I do, you know, in my writing, the feedback I most often get is, I have no idea what this person looks like because you gave no physical description. I just think I have trouble visualizing it. So I think that activity can be great. Another really good one is coming up with a soundtrack for your novel. So, you know, coming up with that, I think, helps really set the tone and the mood of your book. And then a lot of people will just listen to the same set of four or five songs on repeat. And some people even will listen to just a single song thousands of times as they write this book because it kind of puts them in the headspace of that world.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We have Brand on the phone now in Dallas. Hi, Brand.
Hi.
Hi, go right ahead.
My question is this. I'm writing a novel, and I keep getting caught up in the facts, for example, say Greek mythology, and I'll stop working on the story to go and do some research on the factual or truthfulness of what I want to write, and I can't quite get back into the story where I left off. Do you have a way to train myself to stop from doing that? Or
it's a great question.
It is that, and that is a I think a kind of a challenge that anybody who is writing things that are tied to reality or history in some way faces. And the advice that I've seen people who write in historical genres or basing things on reality is to do a small amount of research, which it sounds like you've done, and then go ahead and let the story be king, to really focus on the characters and the conflicts between them, and don't worry so much about historical nailing, you know, the exact parallels between this mythological creature or this god, and really just kind of write your own way. And I think then when you have finished it, you can go back in and decide, okay, how much alignment do I want to bring to that? But oftentimes people really appreciate the places where you diverge from those moments as well, and or they don't care, that ultimately all they want is this great story that you're telling. And if it's not exactly in alignment with the pantheons of the gods, then that's fine with them. So I would say just, you know, do a little bit of the research, enough to orient yourself, but then go ahead and write this full draft where you're just focusing on the story.
We have an email here from Vicky and Alan who says, I'm interested in writing a memoir with the target audience being only my family. Would that fit into this 30-day project?
It would. And so National Novel Writing Month is a beautiful name, but an inaccurate name on many levels. And it really should be called International Novel Writing Month. We have, you know, writers, we have chapters in about 500 cities and towns around the world. We have people taking part from 30 countries. But the novel part as well, we really want to be sort of a source of creative inspiration, whatever you're writing. So I would say probably 85% of our participants are writing long form fiction. But then we have a great group of folks who are doing things like writing memoirs or writing screenplays or writing PhD dissertations. God help them. Anybody that is ABD, all but dissertation, please come to National Novel Writing Month and get some progress on that thing. And we have there is a category called Rebels, NaNoWriMo, or National Novel Writing Month Rebels, where you can kind of find a community of people who are doing exactly the kind of writing you're doing, whatever it is. So it could be epic poems. And there you will find your people, and you can then kind of be on the message boards checking in with them and having conversations about how best to use this sort of wonderful momentum and creative encouragement to get your specific project done.
Back to the phones now. This time we have Juan on the line in Fort Worth. Hi, Juan.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
The reason I'm calling, I'm a novelist myself. I've been writing for a long time. And when I was trying to teach my children to write, this is back when they were, 9, 10, 11 years old, one of the things that I pushed them to do was to write. Just get it down on paper. It doesn't matter if it sounds silly or if it sounds weird. Just sit down and write, because it was amazing to me. That's what the barrier was. I mean, the physicality of just sitting down and taking the paper and writing down the words, it's almost like a forbidden place for them, or was like a forbidden place for them. And so once they got past that, once they sat down, then they were off and running. But I find that to be the case even with adults that I run into, where they say, oh, I just couldn't write a novel. And I said, of course you can. And that kind of piece of sitting down and beginning is terrifying to them. So I just wanted to share that with you guys.
Thanks for your call.
That's such a great point. And I think that lesson holds true for adults, too. There's just something very terrifying about starting. And it is interesting. There's a sense of inertia. But once you get rolling, once you, as Isaac Newton pointed out, once you're an object in motion, you tend to stay in motion. So I think that just getting over that initial hump can be the thing that just opens the floodgates. And on the subject of kids writing, too, one of the great things about National Novel Writing Month is we have a free Young Writers Program. So K-12 classrooms are also taking part. We'll probably have about 2,000 of them around the world, where kids of all ages are using our free curriculum. We have free workbooks, buttons, and stickers, and they set their own word count goals and then write a book in November. So at this point, we have a bunch of students that are doing it. Sometimes entire families do it together. And I think it really is something that is great for all ages. And for a kid to write their first novel when they're in third grade, I think really forever changes their relationship to writing, because, they're never afraid of writing again. If once you've written your first book, that idea of a short essay, or as you get older, kind of a literary analysis, is really not daunting anymore. I mean, you've written a novel. What can't you do?
Do people ever send you their finished manuscripts just because?
Usually about once a year, somebody will, I think, mistakenly feel that I personally need to validate their novel, and so they will find my address online and email it to me, and I always write back and say, thank you so much, I'm not going to open this file, but I congratulate you for having done it. And then I direct them to the proper official word count robots that can do the validation for them.
Are you willing to give us any clues about what you plan to work on this year?
Well, I would give you every clue, except I have no clues. I had an idea that I scrapped. So if anybody can call in, or Chris, maybe you can help me. Any basic story ideas would be very welcome at this point.
Good to know. Teacher, writer, and speaker Chris Beatty founded National Novel Writing Month in 1999. He's just published an expanded and updated version of his book, No Plot, No Problem, a low-stress, high-velocity guide to writing a novel in 30 days. Chris, it's been a real pleasure. Thanks for joining us, and best of luck in November.
Thank you very much, Chris.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect is assistant producer. Jeff Whittington is executive producer. You can find me on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think, and you can contact the show via email at think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.